that is, you will, if, there you go. This is another of these newly released Steve Goodman CDs. This one's called Santa Ana Winds, and I just looked at engineer Dan Long and said, holy. Well, I didn't say holy Christ. I said something else, but I thought, man, this doesn't sound anything like this, Steve. You'll hear more. You'll hear more. It is my great pleasure to have in here Martha Bain and Vitaly Vladimirov. Vitaly is a writer, one of the writers included in the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, a new anthology that is edited by Martha. Martha was here probably a couple of years ago, not exactly here, but certainly on my show on WGN, talking about a fabulous book, Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology. Your first anthology, this, I have to tell, I love that book, Martha, as you know. Hi, how are you? Hi, Vitaly, how are you?
Hi, Rick.
You know I love that book.
Yes, you, yes.
I like this one even more.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you, this one is a incredibly distinctive, and I think people should. It's an essential element for any Chicago bookshelf because it will give you a Chicago that you don't normally see. There are, by, you know, city cartographers, 77 neighborhoods in this city. By real estate developers, there are probably 190 neighborhoods in the city. But very few people get to all of them. Mm-hmm. Very few people get to more than the one they live in, the one they work in. Take us back to the decision to do this book, how you decided on what neighborhoods, and was it a combination of finding an interesting writer? You and Vitaly met for the first time tonight, and I thought, mm-hmm. wow, that's great. You're one of the writers, but you're just
meeting. I mean, we've been corresponding for a year.
Of course. No, I don't doubt that for a second. But how does the process work?
Well, this book in particular is the third in a series of quote-unquote guidebooks that Belt Publishing, the publishing company I work with, has done. So we've done two, one for Cleveland and one for Detroit, that were modeled, that were similar, but each one's been a little bit different. But what they share is that they're really not these, they're not what anybody would actually call a guidebook in any kind of useful way.
Well, a couple of the chapters in here are done in kind of guidebook
fashion. Some of them are a little more guidebooky than others, but what it really is a collection of essays and photography and poems, and it's very personal. And not comprehensive and not prescriptive at all.
And not meant to be.
But in terms of how this one came together, I mean, I really like...
You're a longtime journalist in this town. You have certain connections in the
Yes. Yeah,
the
I definitely
field.
Have. I mean, I think that I do have a network, although it's also that network has shifted and evolved and warped over time.
As journalism has.
And I think my network isn't just limited to journalists necessarily.
Oh, but not
to
at all.
Writers and people who... And doers, people who do interesting things and like to talk about them. But for this, what I really wanted, I let the writing itself shape the structure of the book. So I didn't really go out and say, like, okay, you write about this neighborhood, you write about that neighborhood, you write about this neighborhood. I started by putting out an open call for submissions, which is where you came from.
Exactly.
And I tried to spread that across as many networks and platforms as I could. I asked people that I knew who maybe were connected to other writing groups or writing scenes that I wasn't connected to spread the word.
And I have to say, I got the link to the submission, like, well over a dozen times. I had so many people contacting me.
Oh, God. I didn't know that. That's great.
Well, the other thing I'm going to ask is I could imagine that you would get swamped.
Yeah, well, I was interesting. I was swamped. But it was not a comprehensive swamping. It was very, like, there were still giant empty dry pockets of the city where I had gotten no submissions. So that was when I started doing some targeted outreach, and I reached out to some writers and I said, "Hey, will you write about this neighborhood?"
Vitaly, when you first saw this and jumped on it, what was the appeal for you?
Well, the appeal for me was multifold. I have been collecting these stories and these narratives in and about Uptown for a while when I saw the call for submissions. And so when I saw the link, for me, it was an opportunity to share a story that I knew was very special and a story that is really so unique and so wildly unexpected that anytime I shared it with people, they were just so...
Well, Vitaly brought in a small notebook filled with these notations.
So for anyone who hasn't read the piece,
Oh, that's plenty. That's probably everybody listening.
Since the book's not actually out yet.
Yeah, the book is not out yet. So if you've read the book, you're something of a miracle worker.
Well, I see. So, a slight summary then is...
Yes.
I spent well over a year gathering oral histories on Argyle Street in Uptown, where I asked people to share a memory of the street, this area that is known for its Asian American identity and character, with all the pho and Chinese restaurants there. And I did so because the area is in rapid flux. It's changing quickly for many reasons, and I wanted to go out there and just talk to people and write down this history that I knew was very fleeting. And so I had been doing this for about a year, and I have these hundreds of scraps that I've brought with me to the studio that are just on post-it notes. People posted them on these boards that I had right on Argyle, and so when I saw the link, I had been sitting on this trove of stuff, and I just really wanted the opportunity to share this history, this narrative of people who have been in and about Argyle for decades.
In your piece, which is titled Uptown, A Trip to the Argyle Museum of Memories, you include, perhaps dozens of these, you include about a dozen of these memories among them. Here's an example. We moved to Uptown in 1977. One of my earliest memories were attending carnivals at Foster and Sheridan. Uptown instilled in me a love of food that remains today. So they are memories, but they also are impressionistic memories. Yes, that's, to my mind, the great appeal of your piece.
I only gave people a very small post-it, you know, like a large post-it to write on, and so there's just not a lot of space, and, you know, this is at a festival. They're there to have fun, and I'm like, hey, tell me a poignant, touching memory.
After you gather these, and they're in a nice notebook, I think it would be some kind of art exhibit, but after you gathered these, what was your intention? What did you think of doing with them until Martha came into your life?
I honestly had no idea. That wasn't even a concern. I felt like I was doing
triage.
You
weren't being pragmatic about it.
No, I felt like I was doing triage. I mean, this place is hemorrhaging people, and with them, memories, and so I felt like I just had to, like, jump in and gather as much as I could. And so then the link for Martha's guidebook was then very opportune, because I felt like this was an opportunity for me to lock in and write down some of this stuff that I've gathered. And I knew that I included all those memories in my piece.
Well, and you also included, you know, you did a fine job. I don't know if you're a trained journalist. I think you're an academic, aren't you? What do you do?
So I'm an urban planner by training.
That's right. You're an academic, but an urban planner.
That's right.
You're an academic. And you have your own
social scientist.
Yeah, you can learn more. He has his own website, which we will tell you about later.
Yes.
But part of it is you did considerable research here, too. You give people a pretty decent, you know, as we were talking outside, a decent history of Uptown could run to 500 pages
right.
if need
and
be.
And that's if I can just jump in, that's what I really like about this piece is that
I
feel like it really fuses history and personal history
no
and memory
question.
In this way that it's very much an exemplar of the kind of work that I was really hoping to get for this anthology.
You know,
because I didn't want it to be a history
No,
a book about
not.
History. Yeah. I want it to be very contemporary, but you can't talk about neighborhoods and you can't talk about cities without talking about history.
One of the other hallmarks of this book, and again, it is called the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. What I find, and I'd like you both, because obviously, if I tell you've read other submissions,
sure.
you didn't just write your own over and over, as good as it is, over and over again, is there is a quality in here of searching for meaning, of searching for place. We got to take a short commercial break, but Martha Bain and Vitaly Vladimirov, I want you to talk about that, because that's what one of the things I got out of this book. You know, what does it mean? Talking about Marquette Park, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So please stay tuned. This week on Chicago's Best, the team is cooking up everything from the Chicago char dog to an Italian sausage. There are also two prominent pizza places mentioned in this book, the Chicago Neighborhood Guide. Welcome back. We're talking about the newly published book called The Chicago Neighborhood Guide, edited by my friend Martha Bain and published by Belt Publishing. Belt Publishing has a fine array of books you will not find at in your grocery store. Beltpublishing.com. Vitaly Vladimirov, one of the contributors to the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, with an insightful and charming and entertaining take about Uptown, sort of focused on Argyle Avenue when he lived there and when he asked people what they thought about Uptown. Martha, when the submissions started to come in, what kind of editing did you have to do to many or most of them?
I think I took a pretty light hand for me.
Got no edits.
Yeah, your piece didn't really get any edits. They were all copy
edited. No wonder
you
like meeting each other. An editor who doesn't edit and a writer who doesn't need editing.
There were a handful of pieces that I took a more kind of developmental editorial approach to. But I would say there was maybe half a dozen total. And the rest of them, you know, they were good. So that's why I wanted them in the book. And
yeah.
So they already spoke for themselves.
What about, I asked you before, unbelievably, I remember what I asked you before the commercial break. I said that one of the threads in the book for me and in many, many of the pieces is a kind of search for the meaning of a neighborhood. And
yeah.
A search for the meaning of what, of how that neighborhood plays a part, not just as an its own entity, but as a part of the city. Did you both sense that too, or am I
definitely?
You know, for my piece, what was really important is, you know, I'm personally also an immigrant. I came to America from Russia, and living in a neighborhood that is so closely tied to an immigrant identity of Southeast Asian folks, for me was really beautiful and poignant. And you know, there's not a Russian neighborhood anywhere in Chicago. And so for me, being in Argyle is very special because it's a place built by immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And so it accesses like a part of something inside of me that's very personal. And so that's part of the connection that I felt with it. And even though I'm not Asian, I felt like it was extremely important for me to write about it so that I could preserve this thing. And so that's part of what I was searching for. And reading some of the other pieces, two, it's, you know, really trying to understand boundaries and where we sort of position ourselves in the city, the way that we inhabit urban space. You know, these are things that I think about as an urban planner, and, you know, sort of the boxes that we put ourselves into as residents of this very beautiful but very broken city.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and so what's really beautiful about this book for me is the way that the boundaries seem to fall apart. You know, it starts off with Austin, and that piece is written at the very edge of the city.
Mm-hmm. Let me read something. It's from the chapter by my a friend of mine. I do not know everybody in this book. I am thrilled to meet people I have never met before, writers. Gint Aris is a fascinating guy. He writes novels, mm-hmm. and he's written in this book about Marquette Park, mm-hmm. Members only. And at the end of this piece, he's talking about a vanished social club of his youth. He writes, Marquette Park use the codes of ethnicity and race. And this literally, talk about a universal paragraph that could apply to virtually every neighborhood here. Its membership depended on a kind of paranoia that's based almost entirely on lines we're too frightened to examine. That's the lesson Marquette Park offers everyone on the outside, and the value of its history. We fear adding members to our club will kill the club's identity. That's to say, if I cannot be who I understand myself to be right now, it means I can't be anything at all. Perhaps it's time to have fewer small clubs on opposite sides of the street, but extend invitations to those who suffered from history's monster. If we count up the members of that club, we'll find that it's very large.
Yeah.
That, do you both not think, is a paragraph that captures a great deal of the you know, emotional power of this book.
Yeah, that's a kicker of a paragraph. And
yeah.
I think that it really speaks to the search for identity that I think runs through the book, and the search for stability. I don't want to necessarily say it's safety, but stability. I think that there's so much, we're living in a city that is changing. I mean, any city is changing all the time, but I think it's undeniable that it's changing very rapidly in the 21st century. As we know, it changed a lot under the former mayor, which I alluded to a little bit in the book, and which is talked about in the epilogue to the book. So people are searching for something to hold on to, whether it's personal identity, ethnic identity.
Or their peace
or just
of
a sense
the city.
Of, yeah, their history, their personal history.
Yeah.
A lot of, it is impossible, I've discovered, to have people write about places without having an element of nostalgia. I think that the book works fairly successfully at not giving into sort of like sort of cloying nostalgia. But there's this sense of loss that runs through it, and a sense of trying to hold on to something that's slipping away. And
well, but also in that one bit that I read from Vitale's Uptown story about someone remembers, it's like remember moving there in 1977. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are tied mm-hmm. to the city. There is nothing wrong as we rush toward the future and the hip new restaurant on Randolph Street to remember the past, because that absolutely tells you where you are. Well, you're an urban planner. Right. You've got to know that.
Exactly.
And the past is visible every time you walk down the street.
Speaking of the past, actually...
Well, it's vanishing here and there, but yeah, I know what
before,
you mean.
Before Argyle was Asian, it was actually a Jewish neighborhood.
Sure.
And there was a tiny little trace of that in this drugstore sign that was tucked under the awning of a Vietnamese travel agency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that storefront actually is now under repair. The mm-hmm. building is still Asian-owned, but... I was walking down the street. I had been out of town, and the sign for the drugstore had been pulled off and broken. And I was just like, no. And I really examined it, and I actually pulled out the glass shards and I arranged them, and I took some pictures of the broken sign. But I was just like, well, what is it that I'm feeling a sense of loss for? So for me, it was enough just to take the picture and move on. But
see, even you as an immigrant, I mean, you are not looking at something on Argyle Street and hearkening back to Odessa or Minsk or
right.
something. You are hearkening here. And
correct.
And there are those signs all over the place. I don't care whether it's a tree. I hate when they tear. I'm not one of these preserve every old building, but you got to preserve some.
Yeah.
And I think that is, here's the chapter, a fascinating chapter, Pilsen. The quietest form of displacement in a changing barrio.
Mm-hmm.
What you will get from this book, ladies and gentlemen, I think my two guests will agree, is a real, real sense of Chicago. Not the Chicago you see on the nightly news, where there's a killing in Garfield Park. If you have lived here long enough, I know people who grew up in Garfield Park, and they will go back to just see and remember. And that's a huge part of this, Martha, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think, but I also think, like, Garfield Park's an interesting example, because the Garfield Park's represented in the book by a photo essay.
Yep.
By a photographer named Gabriel Michael. And it's beautiful. I mean, his photographs of Garfield Park a lot of them are of what might be considered, blighted structures or something, or just sort of urban. General
decay.
Urban decay,
quote unquote blight.
Right.
But they're really beautiful. And there's one picture in there that I just really love, which is a picture of the lagoon in Garfield Park near the dome, looking out, and you can see the Sears Tower in the background. And that to me is like such an iconic Chicago image.
In that photo essay, the one picture I like is the building from the 1890s mm-hmm. in the middle of demolition. Mm-hmm. And for me as an urban planner, I'm like, we're just, again, speaking of memory, we're just throwing away our legacy, mm-hmm. because here's a building, Chicago's so new, and here's a building from the 1800s, and we're just demolishing it mm-hmm. with no care.
And I don't know what's going to go
there. Yeah, it's a 3100 block of West Lake Street built in 1869. fully well, and there's another one here under demolition. This is a sad one at 734 South Sacramento that was built in 1894. It, with all due respect to urban planning, some buildings need to be torn down. There's no doubt about it. But maybe if you become the city's urban planner, you can. It has to be done with some discretion. And I think
Miss Life was listening.
And maybe she is. And you'll work for cheap, and she won't have to bust her budget on this thing. But done with some discrimination, not just ooh, look, that's old, let's tear it down.
So
Go ahead.
There's an incentive. There's always an incentive to build new because it creates jobs. So
well,
they're all bound up together. But I won't go down that track.
The thing that I want to say too is the narratives that we're sort of fed about Chicago versus what you get from this book is there's this comfort that we have in these very common narratives of rich versus poor, black versus white, north versus south, and it completely misses the point. It's almost like fast food. You know, it's this junk food that we consume, and we are all
And I'm not sure there's that much comfort in those.
Well,
in
but it makes certain people
troubles.
Feel better about themselves, and so, you know. I'm very much a person who thinks, you know, sure, I live in Edgewater, but what happens in Garfield Park is extremely important to me, and I care very deeply about what happens in other parts of the city. And this book really makes you care in a way that perhaps is...
Well, it gives you insights into the part of the cities that you do not go. As an urban planner, I have to think that you travel the city in the same way I do as a reporter trying to find stories out there. But very few people, you know... Bus drivers have a route. Cops have a district. Mailmen have their routes. There are very few people who have the joyful freedom to travel and sort of get a glimpse of the city. And I think that is one of the essential things this book provides.
If this book motivates people to do that, that I will be very happy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these boundaries, though, oftentimes are self-imposed.
Sure.
And, you know, we put ourselves in these bubbles and, you know, It only reinforces the things that are broken about our city. And, you know, if we are to try to fix anything in our wonderful city...
People fall into those patterns because they choose to. And yes, but also because there's comfort in it. There are kids living in Lawndale who have never seen the lake here. And the reasons are fearfulness, lack of financial means... There are a lot of reasons for it, I think. We'll continue on. Again, the book is, and they're having events coming up. Where you can meet these people who were responsible for the fantastic, the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. So stay tuned.
Time to get back to Mr. Rick Kogan on 720 WGN.
Thanks a lot, Roger. You will find such notable authors in this book as Kevin Koval, the poet, Dmitry Samarov, the incredibly prolific writer and artist, but you will also discover new talents. That's one of the reasons you should buy the Chicago Neighborhood book. Vitaly Vladimirov is one of those new talents, and God, come on, Lori Lightfoot, hire this kid to.
Well, I will say I work for a pretty badass women-owned urban planning consulting firm, and we're trying to do things different and better so that we can have better places.
Good, because the new generation's got to be the generation that fixes what ails this town. Vitaly, you have a website of your own, don't you? What is it?
I do. It's vitalyv.com, VitalyV.com, and aside from writing pieces such as this, I also do walking tours. So I actually have some walks I'm planning as part of the Chicago Architecture Biennial in early October under a project called Jane's Walks Chicago to honor Jane Jacobs, the urbanist.
Yeah, the great urbanist. Also, Martha Bain, you got parties coming up on Wednesday. Wednesday the 11th.
Wednesday, September 11th is the big book release party at the Hideout, and it's at 5:30. And we have a slew. We have 9 contributors reading at that. There are 45 contributors to the book, and maybe 10 of them don't live in Chicago, but the rest, now they used to.
Yeah, they, of course.
But
they did.
But I really wanted to try and give everybody in the book a chance to...
A stage to present their work
if they wanted to. I still haven't quite got there yet. I may have to schedule one more event. But good. We have That's 4 enough. So far.
And people can go... Is all this information at beltpublishing.com?
All the information is on the events page at beltpublishing.com.
There's another one at the Mars Community Brewing in Bridgeport.
On
another
September 17th.
Another one at the Hopleaf in Andersonville.
One at the Hopleaf is on the 1st of October. And then there's one at Rose's Lounge in Humboldt Park on October 9th.
You must have, from people beside myself and John Warner writing in the Chicago Tribune, a great deal of praise so far, even though it's just about to be published. Yeah.
Not yet so far. Okay. But the Tribune review that came out this week was really just really wonderful and a total surprise. But I have done some. I've done some interviews over the summer with different journalists, and so there should be some other pieces rolling out in the next week or two. That
I don't even
not
care
sure
about
exactly
that. I'm endorsing this book. You've heard these two talk for the last 40 minutes or so. That Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. You would be a fool not to have this on your bookshelf, and you would be It will introduce you to Chicago today. It will not have every single nuance of every neighborhood. It does not have restaurants much beyond Vito and Nick's and Pudgy's Pizza. It is not that kind of conventional guidebook, of which there are many and which most of them are no good. Someone could come to Chicago. Then one of the things I'd love to see, I know this book probably won't be sold at airport bookshops, unfortunately, but
those
to come to Chicago,
surprise.
To come to Chicago and have someone get this book and read it on the 2-hour flight back to Manhattan and get off and go, oh my God, I stayed at the Intercontinental Hotel, but do I know Chicago
right
now? They really will do that. Congratulations to you, Vitaly. I think it's a great piece. It's about Uptown, kind of focused on Argyle Street, but also focused on the people who wander and live and work and love on Argyle
Street. There's still so much to say about that part of the city, Argyle. There's new people coming in constantly, new businesses, new stories to be told.
Yeah, always. That's the great thing about living in a place like Chicago. Martha, congratulations. This is really an essential and tremendously enjoyable book, too.
Yeah,
thank you, Rick.
Just really quickly, I do think it is really wonderful in part that it does change a lot of the narratives around Chicago are just so tired. And this book is truly uplifting. It's kind of life affirming. I mean, it's just very moving. Some of the pieces in here are just so poignant, and it's just amazing how much emotion can be packed in some 3,000 words.
There's heart and soul in here. You have 45 writers seeking the meaning and the heart
in weird
of
places, in some strange corners of Chicago, which is what I love about it.
That's the best thing about it. Yeah. Even if you think you know Chicago, you will find new parts of Chicago.
I've lived here for 10 years, and it's all new to me. So
I've lived here considerably longer than 10 years and written about it consistently, and I found new things.
You should be in the book.
What?
Why aren't you in the book?
Someone should have interviewed me. And next book.
I will allow
Vitaly to interview me for the book.
Sign me up.
You're signed up. If you can't be the urban planner for the city of Chicago, you can interview Rick Kogan for it. Martha, congratulations. These two books back-to-back are really something. I don't know what you're going to do next, but you've set the bar pretty high.
Thank you very much, Rick.
Vitaly, we'll do an interview one day.
That's right.
We'll be back and talk about the season of concern in a few minutes.